god, what is that in the sky? It's a dragon! Welcome back to Dragon Readers. I'm Nora, this is Em.
Hi.
Watch out for that dragon.
You know, that dragon's fine.
We're back with our first reading of Brisinger.
Yeah. of four. First of four. Paolini's changed.
Yes.
I feel like there's been a dramatic shift in authorial voice that happened in this book. And I don't necessarily think it's bad, but it's expansive. And, like, you know how it's like, oh, I'm surprised how terse the book was. It's always something happening. It reads kind of like a light novel in some ways. That's all gone. This is a fucking brick.
It is. We are in a new thing now.
Yeah.
I feel like the next book is also going to be a different thing. But
okay.
Let's talk about it. I had a good time this time. I think you didn't have a bad time.
Yeah, I would say, I was a little thrown by the tone shift. There's a lot of, if I say navel-gazing, it sounds like I'm being mean. But there's just way more time spent on interiority, specifically of Aragorn. All mostly revolved around a very, like... calling it Christian is too reductive. It's specifically giving Aragorn, a man who's like, or a boy who's carved men into ribbons, the Frodo mercy plot.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if you haven't read along, the main thing that happens in this episode, the book opens with Rorin and Aragorn and Saphira all going to Helgrin to rescue Katrina. They succeed in doing so. They fight a bunch of guys. It's pretty sick. But in there, Aragorn finds Sloane, Katrina's father, the guy who betrayed everybody. And he's been, like, his eyes have been pecked out and he's chained up and left for dead, basically. And Aragorn doesn't tell anybody, but he gets them all out. He tells Saphira to take Katrina and Rowan back to the Varda, and then goes back in on his own to rescue Sloane. Because he can't just, like, abandon him here, and he doesn't want to kill him, even though he's like, everyone would tell me that I should just kill him. And when he talks to literally everyone in the plot, they go, you really should have just killed him. Decides to carry him out of the wilderness, reveal who he is to him, and then asks, what's the queen's name?
Islanzadi.
Islanzadi to, take him in if he arrives at their border, and just try to keep him there where he can recover, like the Grey Havens, you know, Elvis shit. Mm-hmm. And it's specifically meant to be this, like, Aragorn is now haunted by all of the killing he has done. Not a character trait he's had before this book, really. And all of its killing has been done in basically good service. Like, he doesn't even have the thing that Rorin has, where he was just killing men, like just normal guys who were doing their jobs protecting their villages. He was killing soldiers left and right, and most of them were like Razik and shit. Like, I truly don't understand compulsion to give Aragorn a bunch of moral quandaries that I don't think make a lot of sense. However, in doing so, into seeing like, oh, I must spare Sloane because to do that will help redeem my soul, who's so tainted by murder, he decides that that involves, one, lording over Sloane, who he is, and his power over him,
uh-huh.
And two, never, never, ever, ever telling Rorin and Katrina that Sloane's alive.
And he figures out Sloane's true name by accident.
Yes.
And laying that bare for Sloane is a torturous experience on top of everything else.
There's a bit early on when he's like confronting the like last Razak in the Helgrind. It's implied that the Razak, this is like the end of the Razak. Like, these are all of them. They're all dead now. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, he just genocided a species, I guess, then, too. Well, let's add that to his crimes. Maybe you could feel bad about that.
If there is anything in Aragorn that is ontologically evil, I guess it would be the Razak.
Yes, I know.
It would
be the Razak, yes. No, I don't particularly feel too bad about this myself. But if Aragorn's feeling bad about killing normal guys, he should feel bad about doing a genocide. I think that's, like, bare minimum. That one said that Galbatorix was working on figuring out its name. I don't know what pronoun he attached to it, but Galbatorix is trying to discover the true name of something. Mm-hmm. which we find out later is not his own true name.
Right.
He doesn't know his own true name, but it doesn't matter because no one else can find out his true name because he laid a curse on himself where if anyone discovers his true name, knowing it kills them instantly, which is pretty clever, all things considered.
Yeah.
So, like, Arya at some point is like, oh, yeah, like, three sages learned Galbatorix's true name. It killed them. We didn't get to find out what it was before they died. But they did succeed. That's how we know they succeeded because they died instantly. But yeah, he finds out, he just sits in front of this man with his eyes pecked out and dying, starving to death, whatever. And just like, does like a fucking compassion meditation, basically. He just like thinks about why is Sloan like this? What could possibly be his deal? And just comes up with like three words to describe him. Cause he's trying to like figure out how to like wrap a spell around him. And when he comes up with three words in the ancient speech, it turns out those three words are Sloan's true name. But then later goes, I no one could guess my true name. I don't want them to try it. The idea is terrifying. How could anyone know me so well to guess my true name? I'm like, you don't really know Sloan. You like did like a weird like empathy exercise and just like stumbled into it. I assume this will later be revealed to be part of his powers, the boy who's going to solve all the problems. But it's not really brought up much here, though I do think it's significant. And then he fucking like curses Sloan to walk the earth, head north. He always driven north, even though he's blind. And like animals will come around and like bring him food and water whenever he needs it. Though it's going to take Sloan's own energy. He like powers the spell with Sloan's own life force. And I'm like, this guy's already fucking dying. Are you crazy? What are you talking about? It just seems so impossibly cruel. And Aragorn is like very invested in the idea that what he's doing is a mercy and it's good for Sloan. It's good for him. It implies that maybe Sloan at some point will be redeemed. If the elves deem him like reformed, they're going to restore his sight, but they're not telling him that because they want him to trick them. The idea that Sloan, a random barber or a butcher, is going to trick the elves into thinking that he's reformed is ridiculous to me.
Yeah. This is an insane part of the book.
Yes. I think this is like the main thing that I was like holding on to because this whole thing is crazy. And I know it's like on some level, I'm like, this is evoking the Frodo Sméagol thing, like, you know, Frodo sees in Gollum like his own self brought low and wants to redeem it and whatever, and it, like the Christian grace that Tolkien was writing about in like a C.S. Lewis style way. He's like less Christian than C.S. Lewis, but not by much. Just doesn't fit well in Aragorn's mouth. I just think it's weird. I think this is not what this guy's about. I just think Aragorn doesn't suit this to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think by being like this transracial ubermensch, Aragorn feels distinctly modern and distinctly like atheistic, and this is so Christian coded.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. He this is like a window into Aragorn the God Cop.
Yes.
Which could happen in the future, but
But I don't think the book is depicting it like mm-hmm. that. Like, it's like, oh, this is Aragorn taking one step into like a really dark territory where he just turns into like Yoda, right? Just making categorical decisions that affect people's lives and bring, like, I don't think the book thinks of it that way. Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely on the ground, but I'm not sure that, Chris is picking it up.
This is wild. And just like the description of how tortured Sloan is for that whole night is just, rereading it, I was just surprised because I hadn't remembered it being so terrible.
Yes.
And yeah, everybody says, just kill the guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, you know what would be worse than killing him? Is having him never see his daughter again.
Yeah. When Aragorn sends the like, you know, fucking two-way mirror, whatever, scrying thing to talk to the elven queen, I don't remember her name again, sorry. She's in the middle of subjugating a human city.
Uh-huh. Handily, too.
Like she walks in and is like kind of like irritated that he's bothering her, and her hands are like dripping blood because the humans decide to fell the oldest trees in the forest, and the elves were like, well, we're going to take over their city and we're going to install our own government, and they're not. And he's like, what if they resist? And she's like, we have ways of making them not resist. Not clarified at all.
This is not the first time we've fought humans.
Yeah. I assume she means some sort of magic that breaks their wills, but many questions arose when you suggest that. I mean,
they could just be swords.
They could just be swords, yeah. Anyway, meanwhile, at the Varda, Nasuada is engaged in the most racist shit you've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
Her people... The black people,
right?
of Allegasia, who are all like warrior tribes, have come to her to argue that she hasn't been respecting them enough. And there's like a guy who's like leader of one of the tribes, and he's like, "Look, he basically wants to force her into a duel, to take over the Varda because he doesn't think she can do it." Cut it. And he's all, you know, big dick swinging around kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And she accepts the challenge. She knows that like his complaints don't matter. He actually just wants to assert me. So I'm gonna have to do this thing. And they have the challenge of the long knives. I think that's called long knives, right?
Yeah.
Which is they stand together and they each have like these long thin knives and they take turns slicing their own arm. Like he goes and she goes and he goes and she goes. And the first one to pass out loses.
That's right.
And everyone in her camp thinks she's crazy for doing this. And she's like crazy like a fox, because that means everyone's gonna respect me when I fucking own this guy. And my little girl who sees the future said I was gonna win, so I'm not really worried about it. It's gonna be fine. And so they do this, and he'd already had like, was it like four scars?
I think it was five.
So he's done this before. Five. He's done this before and he's gone really far with it. And so she's flipping out, like, you know, sweating and panting, but trying to keep calm. Cause like, if you clench, the muscle tightens and it's harder and it hurts more. And, eventually, they finish on one arm cause you can only do like five an arm. You have to switch to the other arm and doing that. And, she one-ups him by finally cutting herself twice in a row and being like, top that. All in, and he cannot do it and gives up. And then they bandage her arms, so she can't use magic to heal it. She has to just live with the scars. And there's a bit where it's like, do you want us to cover the scars, my lady? And it's like, no, people respect me more if you tear off my sleeves, show the gun show. as she's just bleeding with all these fucking self-harm scars in this tribal combat, but now all of the African tribes respect her. Uh-huh. It's so, and like, meanwhile, like the whole narrative is from her point of view, and she's just being like aggressively antagonistic towards this like paternalism that they're depicting on her. But it's racist. It's so racially coded as of like, all these backwards, evil black men with their backwards ways can't handle a woman being in charge. Unlike all these enlightened white people who don't seem to have a problem with it. That is what the chapter's about.
Yeah. And also we should take their gold.
Yeah, yeah.
We need that gold.
And they're described, like, fully with, like, they have, like, their ears have been, like, expanded with, like, bone implements. And, you know, they're wearing, like, they're literally, like, fucking grass skirt, spear-throwing African tribes.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, Chris.
Another thing that doesn't feel like something that would be in the previous books.
No, you had all sorts of other types of racism. You didn't have to include this normal, like, very pedestrian earth version of racism.
You made up a new one. You made a fantasy one earlier. So this is a mild, also a mild retcon of, like, how common black people are in Allegasia, I guess. Because prior to this, they had been, it had been written, like, Ajahn and Nasuada were like the only ones, like they were from off the map, but I guess no, it's just Aragon and Murtagh who have never.
I mean, I think they mentioned that other people are not used to seeing black people, because it's implied the tribes are from away, right? Yeah. they're not local of where the Varda are at this point. I don't know. Anyway, that's when, so she, like, you know, wraps up her bandages, and that's when, what's the creepy girl?
Elva.
Elva, yeah. I always want to say Arya is of Dune. You're not there yet, probably. I haven't finished Dune yet.
No, but I've seen enough TikToks and tweets that I know what you mean.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, she goes, she's, as they're like just the two of them hanging out, she's like, I'm sorry. I'm sure watching me cut myself like that really like bothered your, you know, magically driven desire to help people. And she's like, well, the thing that really fucked me up was I thought I knew you were going to lose and I lied to you. And that was torture. And she's like, wait, what? It's like, yeah, I knew you were going to lose. You were going to lose on like the fifth cut. And I just told you the other thing. Cause I was like, I don't believe it. And turns out like I can just force the future to go in a different direction, which, many questions about that. None of them particularly covered here.
Mm-hmm. It also adds to Nasuwada, and her growing just immense displeasure with magic.
Yes. Anyway, Saphira's here. She lands, brings Roran and Katrina. They find out Aragorn's not there, and he's like lost in the Empire. And so they make everyone leave so they don't find out about Aragorn, you know, because they don't want morale to suffer. We get the idea that all of the soldiers have so been entranced with the myth of Katrina, the woman who's driven Roran to like be a leader of men, that they are all like fucking hooting and hollering like she, like it's like this most beautiful charismatic woman in the world. And Nasuada is like, she's fine, she's just a lady. She could probably stand to eat a little and get some sun because she's been in a dungeon for months.
Yeah.
Anyway, very shortly after that, Roran starts going, hey, I want to get married as soon as Aragorn gets back. Can we do that? And she's like, well, Aragorn's got shit to do. Like, we don't have time to, because she wants to send him on a mission. And Nasuada is like, come in. I want you to be a leader, but I can't just promote you immediately because everyone's going to think you only did it because you're related to Aragorn. And you're not tested. You're not from here. You have your men's loyalty, but you don't have the men's loyalty. So I want to send you on a mission under a guy, and he can vouch for you. And if you do well, then I'd like to promote you. You're good at this. And he's fine with that. But he's like, I need to wait till Aragorn gets back. She's like, well, I can't just wait for Aragorn to get back. He's like, no, I need to get married right now. It's going to be a problem for my girlfriend's dignity if we don't get married immediately. Because they've been boning. The minute they get back to camp, they boning.
Oh yeah.
Which is ridiculous. that does not really resolve because Aragorn does not get back by the end of our reading this time. Arya goes out to find Aragorn running on her own. She's like, I'm just gonna go. And runs across Aragorn in a town. Nothing much really happens between these two things, right?
There's just the moment where Nargarjvog, the Kull Urgal leader, says, do you want me to go with her? I can't run as fast, but I can certainly run as long.
Oh, yes. And she's like, no, people would try to kill you if they saw you. And he's like, it's not a problem for me. But no, he doesn't go. Anyway, they basically meet at the Prancing Pony. This is literally the scene where they meet each other. She is disguised as a human, and he's like disguised himself more like he covers up his ears with a headband.
Yes,
right?
Isn't that what happens? He does the Spock thing.
yeah, full on Spock Voyage Home nonsense, which is very funny to me. To where the point where he sees her and approaches her, like, to talk to her, thinking that she's just a human that reminds him of Arya. And he's like, oh, I just want someone to talk to. And it's immediately her. And she's like, oh, Aragorn, you're here. And so they run away. They start sneaking out, doing some nighttime traveling ninja shit. They run across some soldiers and kill them. It's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Back to the old Christopher murder. Aragorn literally, like, flicks a pebble into a man's skull. It's pretty cool. And then they have to go and stab him and everyone else to show, like, make it look like they were killed by swords and not a bunch of magic shit.
Yeah.
Because Arya, like, caves in a man's chest or whatever. Aragorn punches a guy so hard his hand shatters.
Yeah.
And so he fixes it with magic. And then he's like, I wish I could get that cool dwarven thing where they have the spike, where they're fucking Wolverine. Mm-hmm. We talked about way back when. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, well, one, I'm kind of busy right now. And two, I don't think I have the bones sturdy enough for the surgery. So what can I do? And he thinks about it and he gives himself disgusting enlarged calluses on his hands so he can punch shit and not break his bones.
Yeah.
And Arya looks at him and goes, oh God. What have you done? It's gonna be at least. I think she specifically says you're gonna have a hard time wearing gloves like that. And he's like, "What I'm doing, I won't need gloves." So he just has enormous yaoi hands. Like, that's basically what happens here.
Yeah, essentially. This is also a part where he has to, like, be haunted by the killing.
Yeah. He talks to her about being haunted by the killing, and she's like, oh, I'm pretty chill about it. She talks about her boyfriend who died. Friend? I don't know. Elves. I don't have anything to say about any of that. They do some magic shit at each other. They meet some spirits. They kind of, like... like reconnect their friendship, and Aragorn's like, don't blow this motherfucker, do not blow this by hitting on her once again, and he does not for once.
So the beginning of the book, and this is where we left off, is that scene with them. The beginning of the book has the two of them camped out outside of Helgrind, and they have like this heart to heart over by the campfire.
You mean Aragorn and Rohan, right? Specifically.
What did I say?
I just want to clarify for the listeners. Oh, yeah. When you said they, I want people to know we mean Aragorn and Rohan.
Aragorn and Rohan, and just, you know, hashing stuff out, talking about Katrina, and then Rohan is like, "So what's up with you and Arya?" And Aragorn's like, "Shut up. Nothing. Shut up." And they just like have a nice conversation that I really enjoyed. Both of the campfire scenes in this reading are some of my favorite scenes for those characters. I just really enjoyed them hanging out. The Aragorn and Arya one as the start of like Aragorn dipping his toe into getting over himself a little bit.
God help.
And seeing Arya kind of open up for the first time because she's been so distant. Like, we never get Arya POV.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to, like, in the whole series, we will never get Arya POV, like, writing. And so this is kind of the most, like, close of a look we get to, you know, what she's got going on. And what she's got going on is that she's sad.
I could have told you that. It didn't take much for that, honestly.
But the Aragorn and Arya,
she is the goth GF, like straight up.
Yeah. But yeah, they do some magic. They, Arya makes a little boat out of like twigs and stuff. And then sets it out on the wind, and it'll gather the energy from its surroundings to like keep flying. And then the spirits show up, and once Arya tells them that Aragorn helped free the spirits that were in Durza, they reward them by making a flower made of gold and jewels that is still alive and growing.
Aragorn makes the flower for Arya as like a gift.
Yes, he does.
And she's like, Yeah, he sings it in the elvish way, and she's like, you don't understand what this means for elves to give flowers to one another. He's like, no, you idiot. I was trading at your place for months. I know what it means.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I really should stop assuming that you're an idiot still.
Yeah, that happens twice. And then she's like, so there's two different times. She's like, oh, you don't understand what this means, but, and he's like, no, I do. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah, then the spirit turns that into like a living gem flower, and then they immediately go, what if we made this an invasive species? What if we had whole fields of these? And they're like, oh, but people would like murder to get these plants. Too beautiful to live. I don't know. We'll figure it out later.
There's one other encounter that wasn't mentioned in either of our summaries yet, which was Tenga.
Oh, the Tom Bombadil mage.
Aragorn meets a wacky old wizard hanging out in some ruins.
He lives in some ruins, and he's like trying to find the primordial magic that's been mentioned like offhandedly, right, multiple times. Mm-hmm. Aragorn is like irresponsibly disinterested in this man. I feel like,
yeah, I was so annoyed.
I was like, you're not going to ask him a little bit about it. You're not going to like try to learn so you can like talk to someone who knows a little more about how magic works about this, because it feels like it's going to be really important at some point.
This guy has, like, 7 or 8 dictionaries in the ancient language, like, glossaries that are, like, other wizards would kill for, like, half of one. And he's got, like, 8 of them?
Yeah.
Aragon, what happened to the young farm boy that would ask a million questions?
Yeah, he just kind of goes, this guy's crazy, and sneaks out the back as he's, like, talking. It's really weird. Like, it's, like, the most, like, I need to put this chapter here to set up a thing, but I don't want to touch it yet, so we're just gonna ignore it, and he's gonna act totally stupid for no good reason. He doesn't even tell Arya about it. Like, what are you doing?
I don't know.
If you see something, say something. That's all I'm saying.
If you meet a wizard by the road, and you help him with his turnips for an afternoon...
Yeah. The other thing that's not important, but significant to me, is the elvish mages show up led by a Na'vi.
In my head, he looks like Kimari from Final Fantasy X.
Yeah. The lead elven mage is like a fucking catman.
Hell yeah, he is. And he's got,
describes a blue catman specifically.
Yeah, and he's got like an aura of pure pheromones.
Oh, yeah, like Nasuada is like, oh, this man's dangerous. All the women are going to want to fuck him. He's too magical.
I want to shout out the dynamic between Nasuada, who hates magic and magicians, and Triana, the head of Duvran Gargata, who is like this really haughty sorceress. And how
in the anime version of the show, she's my favorite character. She's not really in it enough for that to be true here, but I do like her anytime she shows up.
Just the way that Nasuada like needs Triana and like the stuff that she does, but treats her with such utter contempt also, and that is returned in kind. I it's just, you know, shout out to women, honestly. It's beautiful. But we talked about sexy elf, talked about wizard. I feel like there was one other thing I meant to bring up, but now I've forgotten.
Oh, there was just a bit where the Nasuada ingratiates herself to the catman by joking with him, like maybe at some point you'll get tired of being a catman and suddenly become. There's a bit where they're just talking about why you're a cat. Like they've never met like weird transhuman elves before. And he's like, oh, I just did this. It suits my fancy to be a cat, and maybe someday I'll choose to turn into a fish. And she's like, well, that'll be really good if Galbatorix ever decides to march into the seas and subjugate the oceans. And he thinks that's very funny, and decides she's witty and cool, and wants to play some sort of like chess game with her.
Yeah, Bloodgarm is really cool. I wanted to bring up something from the last book really quick, which is that when Aragorn goes to Arya's bedroom looking for her, she has little like bonsai trees that are grown into the shape of sigils in the ancient language, because Arya is the goth GF, but she's also a live, laugh, love girly. She had like peace, unity, strength, or whatever. On
look, she's had a hard life. She would be totally insufferable, but she had too much tragedy, and now she's goth instead.
Yeah, you know. I think.
So you said you had two of your favorite scenes are in this book or in the reading we had. Mm-hmm. I want to know what they are. I assume one of them is Rorin and Aragorn.
Oh, I said a minute ago it was the two campfire scenes.
Oh, the two campfire scenes. Okay.
Everything else that I want to bring up is going to be brought up by future events, so it's fine. I think we covered everything. How are you feeling?
Yeah. Like I said, I think the tonal shift is weird, and I don't really buy Aragorn's moral quandary. Mm-hmm. I think the thing he did to Sloane is like objectively evil, and I don't think the book's ever going to reckon with this. Literally, they spent so much time talking about the curse he put on on Elva is so like wrong for him to have done, but he basically knows that and basically does like kind of the exact same thing to Sloane. He just like curses him to walk the earth and repent in this like really weird way that Sloane doesn't want to do. I will say, shout out to Sloane, dirtbag, son of a bitch. He sucks. There's no redeeming features about him at all. But he's like terrified. He doesn't have eyes. He's dying. They describe like his eyelids are like ragged, like torn sails, right? Like they fucking pecked out his eyes. The minute he realizes it's Aragorn in front of him, he just starts berating him. I love this man for this. So like, I don't care if you're a writer. You stupid kid. You're trying to tell me what to do. How dare you?
He's great.
Just immediately, you can't escape a guy who knew you when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Will never respect you.
Not even a little bit.
But yeah, that's kind of, oh, they do mention a little bit about how, Thorn, is that Murtaugh's dragon?
Yes.
Must have been like hyper grown. So while he is super big and powerful, he's probably just a baby and not that good at being a dragon, which sounds like it would probably be key going forward in the future.
One other note that got mentioned very briefly is that there's a new dwarf in town who is, the replacement, for Hrothgar while the dwarves are trying to figure out their next king.
Yeah.
And I think...
Which, to me, I'm like, that's going to be Oryk. Like, come on. He's the only dwarf that has a character so far, but we haven't gotten there yet.
I think Oryk has left to go to the dwarves at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was like the king's, like, adopted, like, nephew, right? That was the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull up our next, set of chapters real quick. Okay. our next chunk was going to be from Amid the Restless Crowd through Man and Wife.
Okay. I wonder what happens in that one.
I couldn't tell you. And that will be our kind of sort of halfway through this book.
Yeah. It's really fucked up that Aragorn just like swears everyone to never tell Rohan and Katrina about Sloan also.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's a need to know. It's a need to know thing.
Uh-huh. Whatever. Oh, Aragorn does start eating meat because he has to. And he's dying.
He's starving to death. He's like, well, you know what? It's all nice to have this like ideal, but in the face of like death and starvation, I will be eating the rabbit. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then he likes it, and he's like, you know, maybe it's okay to have meat in at least like a little bit, just a little bit.
Yeah, he's ethically blowing up the brains of rabbits to get that meat.
You know? All right, well, we'll be back in another 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You may have noticed.
I'm excited to read more. I was sad I had to stop and, like, read other things, because I was like, I could have kept going after this one.
Yeah, I have to finish Dune this week, so I can't read more yet. But hope everybody also enjoyed the Baldur's Gate 3 episode that dropped in this very feed last week.
I did. In fact, thank you for thank you to Autumn for explaining what all these fucking D&D terms meant, because I hadn't heard of any of them. You were like, people know what a whatever the thing was. fucking spaceship. Magic spaceship. And I was like, no, I've never heard of that in my life.
Well, you know. Who doesn't know about a Nautiloid?
There you go. That's the one. yeah, that was a fun episode. There was a thing I was going to say, and then I lost it saying that shit. Nope. No, I don't have it. Never mind.
There it goes. do you want to do some plugs then?
Yeah, sure. You can find me on Twitter at @EM_being. You can find all my podcasts at neuralmapping.com. If you want to listen to me talk about books in another format, you can listen to Around the Longfire. We're currently reading Beowulf. The translation from, what's her name here? Let's see.
Headley.
Yeah, Maria Devana Headley. We are the middle episode just came out. We're recording the next one tomorrow as we're recording this, but that won't be out till next week if you're listening on the Patreon feed. And man, it's a fucking good version of Beowulf, I gotta tell you what.
I immediately fell behind. Like, I read 300 lines and I took a break and I never had a chance to pick it up again. But it's been good.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, we'll be wrapping that up, and then we'll be moving on to La Mort d'Arthur, which will take forever because it's an enormous brick of a book.
It really is.
Yeah. It's fine. I want to read it, you know?
When I was young, I picked that up because I read Lord of the Rings enough times. I wanted something new, and I just couldn't get my teeth into that one, but...
It's really fun reading the classics because you like there's a part of Beowulf where like a thief stole a cup from a dragon horde, and that's why the dragon's terrorizing the land, and Beowulf and all of his men grab the thief and march him back into the dragon's horde. It's like Beowulf and his 11 companions and the thief all marched into the dragon's horde. And I'm like, I've read that book. We covered that book on a podcast.
That's right. Dragons in their cups, man.
Yeah. Don't steal from a dragon. These dragons are chill, you know? They don't mind. They're chill. Relaxed.
Yeah, they're people.
They're people. Oh, we did one thing that was briefly mentioned. Sorry, I knew we were doing plugs. All of the dragons of the ones who betrayed the writers got their identities obliterated from history to where like you can like read their name and like retain it, but like only for a few minutes you'll just forget that it was named that had a name.
And it also stripped them of their ability to name themselves even through pronouns. Yes. So they started like devolving.
It made them animals, basically, yeah.
Because they couldn't conceive of themselves as an entity.
Yeah, which is really fucked up.
But that's part of, you know, I think maybe if you make a group of evil badasses, like the Forsworn, for example, I think it would be fun to encounter them in the book. Instead, they all are dead before the first book happens. And I just think it would be cool if there were like guys around from the before times.
I'm gonna be honest, I don't think this book needs more characters, and it definitely doesn't need a Knights of Ren running around, because that's basically what you're describing.
Okay, but the Knights of Ren had potential if done right.
Oh, if the sequel trilogy was not a complete and utter disaster in every way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. You can find me on various social media platforms under the name Skulldaughter. Find stuff I've done at norablake.online. Find this and many other podcasts at exportaud.io or patreon.com/exportaudio. Give us some money. You'll get episodes a little bit early. You'll also get a feed, them like mega feed with like a bunch of different podcasts in it. We got a whole bunch of stuff going on over there. You like movies? We got a movie podcast over there.
Yeah.
I'm not on it, but...
No, that movie podcast is very good. I'm always mad when it doesn't come out.
I've been saying it all year, and we're almost done with March, but Pardon My Fist is on the docket within the next week or two. It should be back. Please look forward to that. And, Anomalous Readings is back on track this month. So
Finally reading Dune.
We are reading Dune.
Topical books.
Sometimes something gets delayed into just the perfect slot to capitalize on the current zeitgeist.
Yeah, I was gonna do that beforehand. You should have done it 2 months ago when people were not talking about Dune nonstop.
Yeah, well, I've just today got to the point that I stopped reading Dune last time because I had like read the first act for a different podcast in like the before times, like 10 years ago.
Oh, okay.
11 years ago, maybe. So now I'm in sort of uncharted waters because while I have seen the Lynch movie, I don't think that that's going to be of much use to me in terms of
the back half. People give the Lynch movie a lot of shit, and I don't think it deserves it. I think it's fine. I think the Lynch movie is like a perfectly good adaptation. It cuts out the stuff that you probably should have been cut out. Not if you're going to make more of them, but if you're just going to make an adaptation of the book Dune, I think it does a fine job.
It's not a great roadmap for the back half of the story, though, is my main point.
No.
So,
No. You want to learn about the Fremen, the Lynch adaptation really not going to get you there.
Yeah, there's not as much Amuro Skywalker in that one either. But
what? Excuse me?
Amuro Skywalker, also known as Paul Atreides.
It's not really how Paul's deal. See, my problem is I read all of the Dune books a long time ago, so I just have the whole thing in my head. And like, Paul Atreides is such a small picture of what matters in Dune to me.
Yeah, sure. I have plans to read at least, you know, unless we like plan to do it for the podcast, I will probably try to read more Dune books like on my own.
Yeah.
We have as good a track record on Anomalous Readings of reading sequels as I do in my personal life, which is to say that I don't typically, even if I really like a book, I will move on to something else rather than stay and like...
Since you've covered Hyperion, I've read both Hyperion and Fall of Hyperion.
Yeah.
And 17 other books.
Yeah, you know, I have like, you know, I've read Foundation a couple times. I've never finished Foundation and Empire, the sequel. I read the first Poppy War book, and I never finished the other two, even though I have them.
I'm just saying, Fall of Hyperion got some cool shit in it. It's really dumb sometimes, but I liked it a lot.
I would expect nothing less.
It's far less like formally weird as the first book. Mm-hmm. Not Pilgrim's Progress. Canterbury Tales. Yeah.
What if it was a Pilgrim's Progress, though?
I mean, plenty of books are.
I guess so, yeah. But yeah. Look forward to Anomalous Readings. Should be out by the weekend. It should be out... If you're not paying for this podcast, then that podcast should be out when you hear this. If you are paying for this...
I was going to say, you're recording on Sunday, so...
Yeah, so...
Yeah, this is in the Patreon feed. It's coming. Send an email. What's the email?
AnomalousReadings@gmail.com. No.
Okay,
it's Anomalous Emails.
Oh, okay.
It's AnomalousEmails@gmail.com. I think that's true.
Okay. I just have one email for the entire net, like all of my podcasts on Abnormal Mapping, so I don't have this problem.
Yeah, I always remember it because it's Anomalous Mails.
Oh, okay.
That's just my little...
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah. Until next time, may your sword stay sharp.
Yeah. Keep it Rubio.
Shut up! Rip in peace.
Hey, this is Em. I'm recording an extra little thing because Nora had to go. We stopped and I remembered a thing we didn't talk about and I want to talk about it. So I'm just going to record this extra thing and Nora can put it at the end. Nora, please put this at the end. When Aragorn and Rohan are at the fucking campfire at the very beginning of the book, they have this bit where, like two brothers, they start just like showing each other all of their battle scars, being like, look at the shit that happened to me, and look at the shit that happened to me, as they're like stripping in front of a Saphira who just has no time for these stupid boys. And at some point, Aragorn reveals that last book, remember when he like dove off of Saphira midair and then Saphira swoops down and like he was like in the air. He attacks Murtagh like in the sky like a fucking Jedi Knight and then falls and Saphira catches him and he like lands hard on her. It like tore up his entire like inner thighs because he landed on a fucking dragon. And it is canonically revealed that he totally bruised up his whole balls and junk situation doing that, because Rohan's like, oh my god, does it go all the way up? And he's like, yes, it goes all the way up. And he's like, oh, you won this one, Aragorn. Really goofy, really charming. I just want to point it out because I know a lot of people probably aren't reading these books, and sometimes they genuinely have just really fun character moments like that that really like sell the bonds between these characters. And mostly I'm talking about weird thematic stuff and we don't really talk about those. It's why like I come in every time and I'm like, well, I've got some complaints, and they're very real complaints about things that I think the books do badly. But I mostly enjoy the character interaction stuff because it's stuff like that that's very charming. Anyway, that's it. See you next time.